Welcome you to a very diverse city in North County. At this time, we have our county council lady here. But just before I recognize her, we have Ferguson City Council members here. Linda Zipka, would you stand? Ward 1. And Blake Ashby from Ward 2. Okay, good. And we have our fire chief here, who is also our interim city manager. At this time, would all elected official mayors, would you stand and be recognized? And you are?
Michelle Shea, City of Moline, Mayor.
And President of the Missouri Municipal League. Yes. Thank you.
James McGee, Mayor, City of Anita Park, and the Chairperson for the 24-1 Municipal Partnership.
Richard Hurd Days, District 1 Councilwoman, St. Louis County.
Reverend Dinah Tapman, Mayor of Belfont and Maple.
Would all our police chiefs, our lieutenants, our captains, representing your cities, would you please stay and let us know who you are?
I'm John McCann with the North County Police Department, Chief of Police.
Michael Lyon, Captain of North County Police Department.
Lieutenant David Noble, Moline Acres PD.
Bob Jackson, Chief of Police, City of New Bergen.
Jeremy Hatter, Chief of Police, City of Mount Harris.
I'm Major Martin, Assistant Chief of Police of the North County Police Cooperative.
Thank you for attending this morning. We have some of Ferguson's citizens here. We appreciate you coming out and to support this effort for North County. We all know that crime is spreading, and as mayors, we wanted to get together and start working toward a solution. And so at this time, I would like to introduce to you the police chief of the city of Ferguson, Troy Doyle. You have the floor.
Thank you, Mayor. Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
Obviously, it's an honor and a pleasure to be with you all this morning. Talk about an issue that's affecting us all here in North County. As I look around the room here, I pretty much recognize probably 80% of the people in here in one fashion or another. So instead of me doing a big formal introduction and going through that, you guys know 31 years of county police, became the police chief in Ferguson after that. So I'm not going to go into all the accolades and all that other stuff. But I do want to share a story with you this morning that, and I'll tie it into our conversation this morning. So, and it's about how like I actually got involved in law enforcement. So when I was a youngster growing up in North County, I used to get pulled over and get stopped all the time. And every municipality up in North County I've been stopped by. It got to the point to where I was working at a small job called the Apostle House at the time. And so back then, minimum wage was about, I think it was $2.75 an hour around that time. So it got to the point where it was so bad. I saved up all my money and I figured, you know what, I'm going to try to do a little bit better. I'm going to try to beat law enforcement. So I went to a store in North County, if you guys recall. It used to be a store called Service Merchandise. And I went to Service Merchandise and I go, you know what, I'm going to buy me a radar detector. And if nothing else, what this radar detector is going to do is going to serve as kind of like an early warning signal for me. So whenever law enforcement became close, I knew to go the opposite direction, right? Unfortunately for me and my, just the way things worked for me back then, so I'm on a parking lot up in North County, taking my brother to a bank to go have his check cashed. And while he's inside the business, police car pulls behind me. And gets out the car, approaches me, he asks me for my driver's license, insurance card. Obviously, I produced it. He said, I'll be right back. You know, knowing what I know now, obviously, he took my identification to run my name. So, I could find him. A short time thereafter, he returned back to my vehicle and handed me my identification back. But then he says, hey, what's that you got right there sitting on the dash? I said, it's a radar detector. He says, well, let me take a look at it. So I hand this again. He says, I'll be right back. He walks back to the room. Again, knowing what I know now, probably running the serial number to see if something was stolen or whatnot. A short time thereafter, he returned back to my vehicle. But as I'm seeing him approach my vehicle, I don't see my radar detector in his hand. So I'm a little concerned. So officer, as he gets to my vehicle, he says, hey, guess what? Your radar detector is stolen.
Oh.
And I go, no, they can't. And he goes, no, it's stolen. And then I said, no. He says, well, show me a receipt. Well, keep in mind, I'm 16 years old. Obviously, at that time, you buy things, you rip the package open, you toss it in trash. I don't have receipts for anything. But he took my radar detector. And I don't know if I can actually say the word pissed, but I was pissed about that. And I worked hard to get that radar detector. But he also actually stole my radar detector. And I'm not going to identify the municipality, but I was pretty upset about that. But it was at that point that I decided that, you know, I wanted to be part of the solution, you know, to try to, you know, show something different in law enforcement. So another quick story, and I'll tie this all in. So one day, believe it or not, my stepfather was arrested by his Bella City now. It used to be called Bella Village at the time. And his car was towed and whatnot. My mom sent me up there to sign a tow release and whatnot. But I had just graduated from the St. Charles County Police Academy. So I was 21 years of age. So I figured, heck, while I'm there, I might as well ask them for an application. So keep in mind, I'm in blue jeans, I'm in a t-shirt with some tennis shoes. And I asked the gentleman, I said, hey, by the way, you have to have an application. And he says, you have to be 21 years of age and you have to have graduated from the police academy. And obviously, I must have looked young at the time. So he says, I say, well, sir, I'm 21, I've graduated from the police academy. And he says, well, come on in. So he gives me this application. It's a front and back, literally took me 10-15 minutes to fill out this application. So once I filled it out, he says, jump in the car with me. If you guys, Herb Jackson, if you guys remember the name. So he's a lieutenant at the time. So Herb Jackson says, well, jump in the car with me. I'm going to take you down to City Hall. I swear to you, this is a true story. He takes me down to City Hall. He introduced me to the mayor at the time. If you guys remember the name, the mayor was Lottie Mae Williams at the time. And Lottie Mae, she likes to speak freely, so she used to call me little boy. And she says, so little boy, you want to be the police? And I say, yes. And so she says, well, stay here for a minute. I got to go do something. So she goes in the back. She brings another gentleman out. He asked me to raise my right hand. True story. They swear me and they giving me the oath at this meeting. And I'm in blue jeans, t-shirt, and some tennis shoes. So the lieutenant, after that, I'm a little kind of confused of what's going on at the time. I'm not really comprehending everything. So the lieutenant brings me back, and he tells me, here, I'm going to let you ride with another gentleman. I'm taking off work. And I'm like, okay. So I ride with this gentleman, and he shows me, like, the 12 streets in the village and whatnot. About 45 minutes later, he says, hey, I got to go work a secondary job at Children's Hospital. So he handed me like a little snug nose 5.38. I'm in blue jeans, t-shirt, put this little pistol in my pocket. He said, here's the keys to the police car, here's the keys to the police station. Swear to God, I'm sure. I went to the station just before cell phones became popular. I went to the station, I called my wife, who was my girlfriend at the time, and I tell her, I said, you know what? I said, I'm not sure what just happened, but I think I'm the police. That's how my law enforcement career actually began. So I tell you all that to say this, you know, while you might find it comical or whatnot, but it kind of, you know, brings back to where we are today. So those of you know, I'm a pretty candid person, so I'll probably tone it down. If you listen to the story from the time I was harassed as a youth and the time I started my career as a law enforcement officer, when people say, hey, Chief, you know, I don't think you really understand. I do. I've been there. You know what I'm saying? I know what harassment looked like. I know what racial profiling looked like. I've been there. I got the trophies. I know what it is. So when people tell me that, I say, no. But I also see the other side of this thing, too. I'm in law enforcement. I see the things that we see in law enforcement. I tell you that to tell you this. When I came here to the city of Ferguson, when I was appointed police chief, the first thing, at least in my mind, I thought, when I show up, people are going to complain about robberies, burglaries, homicides.
you know, I'm already prepared. Okay, when I get there, citizens gonna confront me about all these major crimes. I'm gonna be ready for them. You know what I got here? No people complain about
traffic.
Yep, it's being busy, running red lights, not stopping at stop signs, and I was a little bit shocked. I wasn't too shocked, but I was a little bit shocked that, you know, people were concerned about these small things. What it showed me was that while we are dealing with some major issues up here in North County, people are more concerned about not hearing from us. It's in Delwood, it's in Hazelwood, it's in Florissant, it's in co-op areas. It's all over. So we all share similar concerns. But what I've also learned when I started working here too is that people want us meaning our leadership, to get back to enforcing the laws up here. And when they say enforcing, they mean but do it in a fair and equitable manner. They don't want us profiling, they don't want us harassing, you know, any of the things that have gotten us in trouble. They want us, though, to get back to enforcing the laws. Because what I've learned, again, that people realize that when you don't enforce the small things in our cities, the small things then turn into bigger things, and it affects the quality of life all over our community. We're at a pivotal point up here in North County. And I'm going to say that again because I'm not sure if you guys are actually paying attention. We're at a pivotal point up here in North County, meaning that we can take the attitudes of saying that, hey, look, you know what? It is what it is. We just don't let it be. And we can just let it go by the wayside. Or we can take a proactive approach, us being police chiefs, mayors, city council people, state representatives, or whoever we represent, to take a proactive stance and say, you know what, we have an opportunity to save North County, and that's the attitude that I think that we should do as we move forward. We have started some initiatives. I know that our detectives, along with some of the other detectives or other agencies that's represented in the room, they're meeting on a bi-monthly basis to talk about, you know, crimes that are affecting our areas, because I think we all know that the criminals that are doing crime in Florissant do the same thing in Elwood, they do the same thing in Ferguson, they do the same thing in Berkeley and Hazelwood. Crime doesn't have any, we think, of regional borders, but criminals don't think about regional borders. They're all over the place. So the same criminals that's affecting your town is affecting my town and others. So we did put the crime task force together. I know the 24-1 chiefs are meeting currently, where they're talking about crime issues. And I know Wayne Bell's office, too, is also meeting with the area police chiefs, and we're talking about legislation and other things that are affecting our areas. Some of the police chiefs is in here. I know we used to have a North County police chief before, and they went dormant, but we need to figure out how to get that thing back up and going. Because, again, we all need to be on the same page. If our detectives are going to be on the same page, we as leaders also need to be on the same page and start discussing these same issues and whatnot. Again, I can't emphasize more that we're at a pivotal point up here. We all could have to work collectively. And again, this is across an all racial minority, black, white, Democrat, Republican, whatever you represent. We all have an interest in what's going on up here in our county. And we have to take our ego out of this, and we have to work, come together, work cooperatively together to make sure that our county continues to be the community that our citizens come to expect. With that, I'm going to leave it there and turn it over to the prosecutor.
Please, the court. First, we got a couple more elected officials that have come in that I want to make sure we recognize. From the great city of Northwood, Mayor Sharon Pace came in. How you doing, Mayor Pace? And also the great city of Jennings, Gary Johnson, new mayor, Gary Johnson. Also, we have representation here from Corey Bush's, our congresswoman's office, and former Ferguson City Councilwoman Vern Mitchell. I saw her walk in. He had one pretty arrow back there. So, oh, and then we got Errol Bush back there, also from Northwood as well. So to the chief's point, there's a couple of things that I've learned as an elected official, and I've learned from a lot of folks in this room, is that you can have these great ideas, but if you're not out with the people, with the public, you really don't know what the issues are in your community. I remember the first time that I ran and I had some folks in this room, matter of fact, two people. Ella was in there, Linda Lickle was there, and we were talking about, okay, I was talking about my platform and this is what I want to do, and I was all excited. I think I knocked on my first three doors and I just scrapped that from conversations that I have with people in the community. And I think that that's why these types of venues are so important, because we get to hear directly from you, you get to hear directly from us, and I think that's what public service is supposed to be about. And for me, there's two questions I want to answer in my remarks. One is how I got here in this space, and then two, why I'm here in this space. And for me, like the chief, it was a journey. A journey that started right here in North County and in many respects in Ferguson. And there were a couple of things that were turning points for me. Because when I, growing up where I grew up in North County, I didn't know many lawyers. I didn't know any judges. And my experience of the criminal justice system was a few people who had kind of been on the business end of the justice system, and they all told me they were innocent, right? So that was my thoughts. And then I'm watching Matlock and Elton, Perry Mason, and everybody was always innocent, right? So I thought, hey, most of the people that get charged with crimes are innocent, and so I want to be a public defender, and I want to make sure that these people get quality representation. So that was my thought. I went into law school every summer, interned with the public defenders, took a job with the public defenders, and I was proud of my $29,000 a year job with like double that in school loans and stuff like that. And there was a couple things that were turning points for me. About 6 months in, I had one of my first felony cases. And so it was a guy who had been accused of robbing a gas station. Fortunately, no one was hurt. And so I sat down and talked to him. He was in jail because he couldn't make bond. And so I asked him, like, hey, did you do this? He said, nope, I didn't do it. So I'm thinking to myself, yes, this is why I did this. These are the type of people I want to represent. This is perfect. So we get discovery, which is all the evidence and things of that nature. So I sit with him. There's a video of this crime, but the assailant had on a mask. And so I told, as we're sitting there, I'm playing the video for him. And so as we're sitting there, I say, so this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to show this video in court. I'm going to freeze frame it. I'm going to stand you up. And I'm going to say to the jury, look at this video. Look at my client. This is not the same person. Look at the body type. Not the same person. But then I said, but if that's not you, I don't want to do that. And he said, yeah, we probably shouldn't do that. Cool. So I started thinking, maybe everybody's not innocent.
You know, the second story, I think this is the one that was the straw that broke the camel's back for me.
There was a young man who had been charged with some serious crimes of sexual assault, burglary, robbery, and in this case, I can go to the end. He actually wasn't. The evidence clearly shows that the person that was accusing him had been molesting him since he was 15. I think he was 18 at the time, had been providing him drugs. And so as he got older, he started breaking away from her, and she accused him of stealing his drugs, so she called this in. But the evidence was clear. So he was in jail as well because he couldn't make bond. And so for 8 months, as we're preparing for the case, we're talking about life. You know, like, he's an 18-year-old kid. I'm thinking, okay, I want to get him ready for this, for the post-trial stuff, so he can have a good life. And we had a lot of conversations. And, he's sitting with somebody who's sitting there in jail for 8 months. You got an opportunity for a lot of conversations. And so we had the trial. He was found not guilty quickly, because in this case, he wasn't. And so about 7-8 months later, I had went out on my own. Now I opened my practice, and he came back to me and he said, hey, I picked up a new case and I want to hire you. And I was just like, no, I'm not taking the case. I had invested too much, and I think that was just a breaking point for me as far as doing this kind of work. And again, we need good people on all sides. You need good people to do defense work. This is my story. And so about a year later, the prosecutor, who I know today, we were passing each other in court, and she told me that he had been killed. And I think that was the case that made me say to myself, like, I can't do this work anymore. I mean, you know, I don't regret that particular point of my career and the service that we did, but for me, that was the turning point. And then, so that's how I got here. Why I got here is because, you know, like the chief said, public service is important to me. You know, my mother is a civil servant. My father is a retired police officer, 25 years. So that's what we've done. And I've done that as a former educator right down the street at Flow Valley. I've done that as a former judge, and I've done that also as a city councilman right here in that seat. And so for me, it's always, and I will say this, the people in this room know that this is not just a typical small city. This is an internationally known city, a city where people have had to go through some tough times and have to be comfortable in uncomfortable spaces and have to learn to be have uncomfortable conversations to get real solutions. Because when I was elected, when Ellen and I were elected in 2015, it was in the midst of the Department of Justice filing suit. They literally locked in that room over there for hours with Department of Justice attorneys working on community policing, which ultimately brought Chief Doyle here, working on court reforms, which were very much needed, and most importantly, real solutions, not just platitudes and cliches, but actually doing things that people can look at and say, we have seen real progress. I know we got more to do. I think everyone knows that. But if you look at where we were and where we are now, and I think a lot of people in this room are responsible for those strides that we've made in this space, and I wear that as a badge of honor to be honest with you. And I'll start wrapping up by saying, when I was still doing defense work, there was a young man who came to my office. He had gotten 6 tickets in a neighboring municipality. I won't name it either. And so the officer then called an officer from the other neighboring municipality and wrote him 6 more tickets. So I showed up to court, and I'm borrowing the phrase, I didn't say this, pissed. How is this even possible? And so they ended up dismissing the cases, but it was still that idea of, this is what we're talking about when we talk about predatory courts and the things that we were dealing with back then that, you know, people in this room took the initiative to change. There are things that make this place special, and I don't mean that flippantly. I mean it as seriously as I can be. And with my job in this role currently as St. Louis County Prosecutor, and Blake and I were just talking about this earlier. I think too often we hide behind labels. We're this or we're that, as opposed to just doing the work. And as Ferguson City Councilman, like, look, if I did something that people disagree with, it, you knew where I was, and I was going to tell you from that seat right there why I did it, and we were going to talk about it. If I was wrong, then I'd change it. But if I was right, I was going to let you know exactly what I was doing. And as the St. Louis County Prosecutor, the exact same thing. If we have a case or ruling we can't issue or a new issue, and it's, you know, something that people have questions about, you do not have to look for me. You don't have to find me. I'm going to tell you exactly where I stand. I don't do anything that I can't defend or explain. And that's because I came from a place where we understand that transparency, that working together, even when we disagree, is the way that we bring about real change, real solutions, and real reforms. So Mayor Jones and the city council and all of our mayors, our chiefs, that we've been able to work with so closely, even though, you know, we got 88 municipalities, 55 police departments, but we work together. We work together because we know that when we're dealing with issues like crime and public safety, you can't just say, well, I'm just only going to worry about the city, or I'm only going to worry about the county or my city, because people who are committing crimes are saying, you know what, we don't leave the Jennings cars to the Jennings criminals, and we don't leave the Bonita Park cars to those who, no, we got to work together, because that's how, when we look at these rings, that's what they're doing. And so we got to make sure that we're working together and sharing intel. We made some good strides in doing that. So thanks again for being here. Thanks again for having this forum.
Okay. Thank you, Chief Darby and Wesley. Right now, we're going to open it up for Q&A. When you came in, we asked that you write your questions down. So we want to get a lot of questions answered. So if you have your questions written down, we can start the Q&A process, or you need a couple of minutes. Who has a question?
As far as the North County Police Chief meetings that you all were having, I would like to see that begin again. And any initiative that you all come up with, we could all be working on that same issue, such as Tim Tag Tuesday, or whatever it may be. We need to get a handle on all of these things. We owe it to our communities and to the taxpaying citizens that are doing the correct things in our communities. That's it.
Mr.
Cassell. Yeah, the juvenile point system has produced reluctance among police to arrest juveniles and a difficulty with prosecuting them, and it's been a problem for years. I hear talk about reforming it, but I'm not seeing any reform. Can we expect any motion on this problem anytime in the near future?
So, and I appreciate that question, because there's a lot of misconceptions and how many calls we'll get from our office saying, hey, this juvenile broke into these cars, why aren't you prosecuting? Well, here's the thing, in Missouri, we don't have the authority to be able to do so. We have a wall in Missouri with juveniles, and they are only dealt with in the juvenile court unless they're certified, and we can't initiate that process. That process is initiated by the juvenile court. So the overwhelming majority of these car break-ins in these cases, in particular, particularly the car cases, are by juveniles. Many, we have adults that recruit these juveniles because they know the law. Now, we have had several conversations with local, not only chiefs, but matter of fact, we have a chief's advisory committee meeting, the York County Police Chief, St. Louis County Police Chiefs, to Mayor DeShay's point, that have met with local law legislators to look at reforms that we can make, because, Nick, to your point, there are a lot of other states that do it a little differently that we can borrow from. Some states have what's called dual jurisdiction, where certain cases, the adult prosecutor can prosecute those cases with certain classifications of cases. Some states say there are certain classifications of crime that cannot go to the juvenile court, murders, rapes, things of that nature. And so I do think that we want to make certain that we're protecting our young people. We know that's important. But we also want to make certain that when we have young people that are, you know, part of these auto theft rings that are getting more and more violent, that we do have means to hold them accountable as well. And so those, we have had conversations. I'll be honest with you, in Jeff City in the last year, the only thing that we can get oxygen to talk about is what was going on in the city. So when we would go up there with the Missouri Association of Trial Attorneys, the only oxygen in the room was about the circuit attorney's office. But now that those changes have been made, and I'm not judging, I'm just saying these are the facts. But now that those changes have been made, I'm hoping that these conversations can commence again, because I do think it is something that we need to address in the state. But I want to be clear, it's got to be addressed in our state legislature, because those are legislative changes that would have to be made.
Okay. Next question. Chief?
Someone submitted a question about the appointment for our youth. I mean, obviously that's important. I mean, look, any intervention or prevention or things that we can do to mitigate crime in our area, I'm all for it. Including any programs for people that are actually causing the harm in our community. So someone recently asked, so should we what's the word? I can't remember the exact word, but basically take the criminals, reform them, do what we gotta do, and I'm 1,000% for that. Not only am I an advocate for that kind of stuff, however, we have to take the people that are causing us the most harm in our communities off the street today. And once we get them individuals off the street, whatever programs or things that we can get them, whatever skill set that we can provide to them, let's do it. And that's including our team. I'm not sure who asked that question, but yeah, I'm 100% for that.
Yeah, that was my question, too. Mm-hmm. And if I may, Hunter Bush from the city of Northwood, also a staff person for Better Family Life. And my question was, I think that's something that we can, I'm not saying that employment and apprenticeship program is going to solve, but it's part of the civil bullets that we're all looking for right now. You know, so I remember St. Louis County would always have those training programs during the summer for our youth. Those have went by the wayside. And I think if we can kind of just look at that as part of the silver bullet, that might be able to help us for next year as we go through some of these activities with our youth right now. You know, the apprenticeship programs they're out there, and we can't, you know, we're not putting it out there. We're not talking about it enough. You know, so I'm just asking, and I want to go on record here this morning, you know, that might be something that we could look into for next year, and maybe St. Louis County and all of the different mayors here in our community, and even, you know, public safety as well. If we can all just have that conversation, you know, that might be able to help get some of our youth ready and get them prepared for their next future. I know the crime thing is serious, and I know first things first, but let's put that back out there on the table. Thanks.
Yeah, and to that point, too, I mean, I know St. Louis County, they scaled back on the PAL program, the Police Athletic League, which was, I think, was beneficial to the youth that we had up here in North County. Again, I think something else that we ought to explore is the possibility of having it in North County, the Police Athletic League. You know, that, you know, again, that all teams that can work jointly together to have something for our kids.
Okay, what's the next question?
Okay, and I do want to chime in on that, because I think it's a good point. Alderman Bush, I think that it's about investment. It's about what our values are, and I've always said your budget decisions reflect your values. You know, a lot of these situations are not complicated. We complicate them because we politicize them. The bottom line is, when you invest in those kind of programs, not only does it help those young people, but it also brings our crime rates down. There's every crime theory suggests the more interaction that young people or people in general have with these types of programs, whether it be an institution or what have you, they are less likely to commit crime. So from a practical standpoint, it's just about investing in these kind of programs. And that's why I'm big on what most jurisdictions do, and I'm bringing this back to the prosecutor's office. Most jurisdictions, the juvenile court prosecutor is under the adult prosecutor. And so even though they're still in the juvenile court, that's fine, but at least there's some accountability that if there's an issue, you can come to that prosecutor and say, hey, what's going on here. But right now, the juvenile court prosecutor is appointed by the bench. And so there's no accountability to you all. Now, Mr. Gaines will come out, and I tip my hat to him. He'll come out and answer questions and things of that nature. But there's something to that direct accountability that I think is important. And I think that is something that we need to revisit at least. And so I have, you say one
question. Just go to the chief with that.
I got two. Okay.
Okay.
Erica asked a question, what type of relationships are the mayors and the city councils, police, fire departments, et cetera, establishing with families, students, school boards, as well as the communities to be role models and not just law enforcement? I think that ties into Alderman Bush's question. And I can tell you that a lot of departments, a lot of entities, our office, and I use the North County Co-op for an example, are very invested in that community outreach. A couple of departments in here were one that you saw on the news that was pulling people over to give them gift cards. At city night outs or whatever you call them, being there, not in a security capacity, but being there as part of the community. And I think those are the things that we've seen Ferguson do, a model that we changed and we continue under Chief Doyle, because that's what builds trust. And I can tell you right now, you don't have a police department if you don't have trust. And that goes back to those basic tenets of police. You have to have the trust of people. And that's a turn that we saw in Ferguson. We went from hardly being able to get cases resolved because people didn't feel comfortable talking to law enforcement, to a change where we were getting all these cases cleared. Same with North County Co-op. I saw that up front. Moline Acres, I mean, what have they done because of building that trust with the public and understanding how important and integral that is to policing and public service?
Please silence your phone. I hear text messages. Please silence your phone. Thank you. Chief.
One thing that really concerns me is the gun laws. So I think everybody in this room should be going to Jeff City complaining about the gun laws. Until we change that, all the work we're doing is going to be kind of, useless. So we can have kids 12 years old carrying guns, and we really can't do anything. And they're using them. So my shout out is, hey, let's go to Jeff City and everybody, all the mayors, chiefs, prosecutors, and say, hey, we need help. We need to change this.
Mayor.
Mayor James McGee, the mayor of the city of Anita Park, and also the chairperson of the 2401 Minister Parsons here. You know, we can talk all we want to, but hurt people hurt people. So how do you de-escalate that hurt from those people that are hurting? And one thing we don't look at really is the mental health part that really now is in the forefront. And if we don't get a handle on that mental health, all the laws we have are not going to help. And then we have documentation where all the guns and stuff that we done got off the streets, all the homicide we done solved, we take this to Jeff City and show them about all the guns that we done got off the streets. If we all document this and take that up there to Jeff City, I think they will listen, because they listen to us, but they still pass that gun law where it's open carry. And now it's the Wild Wild West. We warn them about that. If you pass that gun law like that, you're going to have a Wild Wild West again. And they're coming in your neighborhood. So now they're in their neighborhood, and maybe they can come together and work with us and help us get this solved. Because we got to look out for the whole community, because it takes a village to raise a child. So we need to look at that mental health piece and also look at the gun laws, like the chief was talking about, you all was talking about. Until we get that and get a handle on that, and also hold everybody responsible and accountable. We have a ordinance, parental neglect. When those kids, young people get out of hand, then we hold the parents responsible. It starts in the home. So I know we can work together and solve these problems, but we have to look at the hurt part first. Like I said, hurt people hurt people. And when we look at that and solve that, then we can start moving forward.
I was going to say, to your point, and I'll go quick, some of these other questions. Mayor McGee is right on point. Especially after 2020, we've seen this increase in mental health issues. I mean, with what we saw, you know, people were kids taken away from school, they couldn't go to school, they couldn't do that normal social growth that, you know, missing that for a year and a half. And we have seen an increase in mental health issues. So one of the things that we did was we created a diversion advisory committee. Because again, we got to do two things at once. We got to, those serious and violent crimes, we're going to prosecute them aggressively. And the chiefs in here know that we are partners in that effort. But there's a whole bucket of people who are struggling with mental health, they're struggling with substance abuse disorder. They haven't hurt anybody, and they need help. And so we've expanded, and that advisory committee includes not only health organizations, but mental health organizations. So we can connect these people directly with the help that they need. When I came into office, there had never been a social worker that ever worked in the St. Louis County Prosecutor's Office. Now we have four. Because we understand that if we're serious about reducing crime, then we gotta be serious about the things that actually result in crime reduction, and that is helping these people who are hurt, who are struggling with mental health before they escalate to the serious and violent offense. And then the second part of your question is, and Chief Buchanan mentioned this too, is that we gotta get the laws changed. Listen, I'm a gun owner, but I'm a responsible gun owner. That means that we need common sense gun safety laws. That's what we're saying. We ain't saying take your guns away. We're saying we need common sense gun law, gun safety laws. Background check. If you are a convicted domestic violence abuser, law enforcement should be able to take your gun in that situation, because we just had four people killed from a domestic violence situation. We had a person held up and shot four or five people in Jennings. Fortunately, that ended peacefully with him. But another issue, matter of fact, we created a task force with Jennings as a result of that. And so we got to look at the laws, the stand your ground laws that we brought in. We imported, Missouri imported them into this region after Trayvon Martin was killed, which we know is not the appropriate way for a security guard who's untrained to be stalking someone. We brought them. Not we. Certain legislators brought those laws to Missouri, and we got to roll the clock back and address these things, Chief Kim.
Thank you, Chief Harvey.
Yes.
Tim Tech Tuesday.
So let me address that. So again, when I came to the city of Ferguson, you know, everybody, like I mentioned earlier, people complain about speeding vehicles, expired temporary tags. The first, I want to say the first 2 months I was here, we had three individuals that were struck by vehicles out here in the city of Ferguson. And a couple of cars we couldn't even identify because they weren't properly registered or whatnot. When I come to council meetings, talking to just the citizens, people say, well, what are you guys doing about all these expired tags? People are not registering their vehicles. And I thought about that. You know, and so what we did, we came up, again, just a catchy phrase, Temp Tag Tuesday. We enforce expired registration every day. Just use the phrase because it was catchy and we'll bring awareness to the situation. So we started doing it. But even my emails to my officers were more geared towards, hey, look, you know, when we stop these individuals that's coming through our city with these expired temporary tags, let's give them warnings, you know what I'm saying? Other than those who are in, like, have egregious violations, meaning that they're driving vehicles that got expired tags from 2018, 2019, 2020. I mean, obviously those who are, have no intentions of trying to pay the sales tax or whatnot. So some of the pushback, a little bit of pushback that came back from it was that, well, while you guys doing it, you kind of pick it on the poor and the weak or whatnot. Chief Doyle has a very sympathetic heart, and I truly understand the single mom, perhaps a single father, that got a child that's living from paycheck to paycheck, that's kind of making it. I get that. And those are not the individuals that we're getting to. The individual getting tickets again were egregious violations, and people who didn't have vehicle insurance, the same people that were hitting people, leaving the scenes, and all of our scenes, these are the same type of individuals. So that's what high temp tag 2C was for.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Councilwoman.
So thank you, I appreciate the time. You know, in the years I've lived in Ferguson pretty much all my life, and Wesley knows, even before I became a council member, I've been very, very active in the community, and I spent 18 years as the Dare Dance DJ for Ferguson. Now, please don't minimize that. I spent 18 years monthly being in a room with 200 youth or more of Ferguson. I had their complete attention for 2 hours. And the music that I played influenced their behavior. If they misbehaved, they knew me as the DJ who started playing Willie Nelson. But what I want to get across to you is, I did that for so long that it was generational. So parents who were my kids before would bring their kids in and say, don't mess with Miss Linda because she's going to play Willie Nelson if you do. And they're like, who's Willie Nelson? They're like, you'll find out. What I want to get to is a lot of the things that all of you have said today. I write down some of your keywords. Connection. Investment. A silver bullet. We have lost our DARE program in all of your police departments. And this is your first touch to these kids. I really loved being a DJ. But I thought it was... I stood there every single month looking at these kids thinking... We have their attention. We could do so much more than just a dance. But, I mean, don't take the dance away because that's how we got them together. You have to give them something they can relate to. But then you also have their attention, so don't waste your time. I think we have to revamp the DARE program. Maybe we have to recreate it 100%. I think we need to look at it as a North County DARE program that has chapters in each city. I also will tell you from a personal observation that I've spent many years looking at, I had to beg police officers to come to those dances. The only ones who showed up were their officer and whoever got assigned to help him. I had to beg officers, but when they came, the kids went crazy. They lit up. They were so excited. And believe me, I've got a microphone in my hand. I made them all do the cha-cha slide. But when they got out there in uniform doing the cha-cha slide with all those kids, the kids were connected 100%, umbilical cord from him to her. So what I want you to think about is I want us, and I'll be happy, because as long as I'll tell you, and Wesley will tell you, I'm a doer. I will sit down, I will create the program if you need it done. And I have experience, and none of you have. But we need to recreate the DARE program because these kids are front row seats of violent crime in their homes. That 9-year-old little girl watched her mother, her brother, and her sister get killed this weekend. 9 years old, DARE band age, or DARE program age. They are dealing with drugs that are packaged to look like gummy bears and Dorito chips. They are being recruited, as you said, to steal Kias because they're a juvenile age range. This is your silver bullet. This is your investment. This is your first touch. So I ask all of you to consider working on a DARE program. If you want help, let's figure it out together. But I really believe this could be part of the answer. And if you can create that relationship that a child knows when somebody's in my house and they're threatening my mom, I got to call the police, and I know which officer to call, or whatever the case may be, they make a connection. Not only are you developing that confidence and that trust that we desperately need, you might even be recruiting.
Thank you. We address that in the closing remarks. We have two additional questions that needs to be answered.
Yeah, and I'll answer both of them simultaneously here. So one was referring to the lack of enforcement of traffic laws in one of the neighborhoods here in Ferguson. The police officers are not doing a whole lot. The other one refers to lack of police officers enforcing, you know, like the fireworks ordinances and things in the city. The fireworks went all the way through the night up until the next day. So those are good questions. again, let me just be candid with you. So in 2016, whenever the city was hit with the consent decree,
that deterred a lot of officers from engaging in any type of enforcement activity. And the culture of the Ferguson Police Department was more of, you know, I don't want to do anything because I don't want to be on the 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock, or perhaps 10 o'clock news at night. So enforcement kind of stepped back. I mean, it became more reactive. What I'm doing here in person as a police chief is just because the city is in consent decree doesn't mean that you can't enforce the laws on the foot. But the consent decree is telling us that you have to treat people in a fair and equitable manner. And long as we do that, this is all people. This is all the community want. Just treat people fair across the board. That's how we're going to move forward here. So the answer to those questions is that me changing the culture here to get me officers back to saying, okay, look, this is what our community wants. We're going to enforce the law, but we're going to treat people in a fair and equitable manner.
Wesley.
A
couple things. One, and this goes back to this point. What we have seen is a real change in the approach and model of policing in this region, and that's led by the people in this room, the chiefs in this room. We have seen more of a community policing model, and this is an example of that. Being at these things, and I got to tell you, it starts from the top. When you have a chief that makes that a priority, and I'm looking at several in here, it becomes a priority throughout the ranks. When you want your officers to engage, it starts with a chief and leadership that are prioritizing that down to their staff and making certain that that is a priority. And we are seeing that, and I'm appreciative of that. And that also starts with our mayors and our city council people, as a former city councilman. I hope you realize that's hard work. It's essentially a part-time position that they're doing, which is full-time plus overtime work. And so I hope you recognize the work that those folks have to do. And as far as initiatives that we've been doing in that sense, in that vein of being proactive as opposed to reactive, are organized retail theft task force. We were seeing these where basically rings of people, not just individuals, you know, that the story of a mom stealing Pampers for diapers, that's different, as Chief pointed out. We're talking about people who are organized and selling these things on social media. We had a big bust working with some of our law enforcement partners. A guy who was selling stuff on Facebook, he had about $30,000 worth of stolen merchandise at his house when the arrest was made. Our auto theft and car theft carjacking task force, that was a result of the conversations and working with our law enforcement partners to recognize the need, because what might seem like sort of an innocent arrest in Vineta Park, well, we might not realize that in Bellefonte neighborhood that this person is part of a larger ring. And so now that we're sharing information, we're able to treat that a little bit differently because now we know and we're working together, and that's where these task force are so important, and they all come from conversations like these. And that's why these types of conversations, Mayor, are so important, because we need to hear not only from our community partners, but also from our residents, to see what you guys are seeing, because at the end of the day, you all are our front line, because people are not going to commit a crime in front of you. They're not going to commit a crime in front of any officer. But people in the community often know what's going on. And so when we have this kind of conversation and this engagement, it helps us do our job. So thank you for that.
Okay.
And one more thing, I'd be remiss not to mention that. So we just started a new program out here in Ferguson. I think we announced it Wednesday. It's called Invisible Hero Program. So usually police departments, you know, we have these empty positions, and usually there's some incentive within the police department if one of the officers is able to recruit somebody else to get some type of award. What we did here in Ferguson is expanded out to the community, and not just for Ferguson residents. So what we did here was that if you have a cousin, relative, son, daughter, whatever, or neighbor that's interested in being a Ferguson police officer, if you refer them to us under the list of Hero Program, if they make it through the background, make it through the police academy, successfully complete their probationary period, we pay the community $1,000 per officer. Mm. So we're expanding this out to the community to help us out.
Thank you.
I just got one thing to say, actually a couple things. I sit on the board for the St. Louis Area Police Chiefs Association. We represent four counties and all their municipalities and the city of St. Louis. And our goal is generally to set the tone of policy and best practices between all police departments. It's almost like going to McDonald's. Any McDonald's you go to, you get the same level of service. And that's pretty much our goal and our mission, to make sure we're consistent with the laws, the best practices of policing. But the way our system of government is set up in the United States, the government serves the community. Serving means participation on behalf of the community. There's a lack of participation, and there's a lack of cooperation, and rightfully so. This has nothing to do with leased property. I lease a condo because I don't want to cut my cat grass. I'm more of a workaholic than anything else. But I know in our community and in a lot of our communities, the turnover rate in people leasing property, ours is 2.5 years. That does not give people enough time to get involved in their government, get involved in their community, create strong connections and strong unity. If you look at any community that has a low crime rate, that are pretty successful in managing themselves and policing themselves, they don't have these problems. And if you look at what they have long-term residency, and they have those connections, and that's what we're missing. That is a big, broad ball to deal with. I don't have the answers for that, but this is what I preach to my own citizens, that they have to participate in the process. We're here to help them. We can't do everything for them. So we are more successful if we can find a way to stabilize the communities in North County.
Thank you. That's why I'm here in Ferguson. We're working on owner-occupied housing instead of investors coming in, fixing the house up, leasing out for 2 years. People don't get acclimated to the system. So we're definitely working on owner-occupied housing. Agent Shasha, if you have a question, then we'll go to CTF and then we'll close it out.
Good morning. My name is Adrian Shropshire, and I heard everybody talking about the youth and what to do for the youth. The mayor hit it. That's the silver bullet, is parents. We have to. I remember back, I got in trouble, minor. The officer took me home and assessed the family right then. If you have 12, 13, 14 year olds, 16 out here at 1 in the morning, 2 in the morning, there's a disconnect with the parent and the youth. I've been working with youth now for probably 10, 15 years with youth initiatives in person. You can open the door up as they come and recruit in the school, but the kids that want to do with the guns, they want to do that. And I think if you're 12, 13, and you're out here in the street, you got to get that parent. Just like it's a law. I know Missouri has some laws. A parent wasn't taking their school kid to school. Reasonable. But what is reasonable when your kid's out here wielding a gun and hijacking people at 12 and 13? That's where we missed the bullet. And I don't know what laws are available for parents to be held accountable at under 18, but we gotta start there. They're going sleeping and their kids out, they don't even know it. Well, there's someplace there, there's something going on. And it's good, but it's only going to bring in a certain group of people. The thieves and the car drivers don't want to come. We try to get the kids that are on that borderline to come to our youth program, and they say, yeah, okay, and never come. So I think that the parents are actually drop down parents. Don't let them take their kid back. You take the kids home and give it to right back to the person that let them out. No. You take the parent, let's go. You're coming down here, too. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
you know, and I'll say this, Adrian, as much as I understand the sentiment behind what you're saying, from a public policy standpoint, that gets to be a very complicated space. Because, you know, you're dealing with sometimes people who are, you know, might be working several jobs, and they don't have the money to have, 24-hour child care or what have you. You have some people who are struggling in their own spaces. Their generational issues of drug abuse, substance abuse, mental health issues. And so, you know, they don't know how to do what many of our parents understood. And to be quite frank, if we were a health-holding parents accountable, I think every one of our parents in this room would have been charged at some point, because we all did something when we were younger. I think there's some space to hold parents accountable, but I think we would get more bang for our buck if we invested, and it's something we talked about, in those underlying root causes that address these historical issues that we've been dealing with. And Chief Fowler's point, ownership, more programs that encourage, and as the mayor talked about, that encourage ownership, those things bring down crime rates. Listen, we concede in this country, we concede that certain schools are going to fail, and we're okay with that. And we shouldn't be okay with that. And so what we're doing is we're leaving a bunch of people, a bunch of kids in school that we know is triage. And so we got to decide what our values are and what our investments are going to be. And if we're just going to continue to say, well, property values are going to determine whether you have a good school or not, and we're going to continue to leave and abandon our kids who don't have the funding in their schools that they need to these poor schools, then they're going to have kids, and they're going to be in the same situation, and we're going to have this whole cycle of violence, a cycle of incarceration. So I think there are some things that we can do to your point, but I think more so, I think we need to invest in those issues that will actually address those issues, and I think that we need to get more from our investment in that method. But I do get your point.
You had any closing remarks?
Okay, well, I appreciate everyone coming out this morning and sharing your thoughts and concerns. And again, let's work cooperatively together to make North County a place to live, work, and play.
Okay, I have one announcement. When you came through the door, you were handed a card for CTF Alert in honor of Christian Taylor Ferguson, and they're asking that you take this card, give it to any and everyone, because it's very important that the police departments are alerted when children are missing who have medical conditions. Thank you. I'd just like to sum it up. I have two takeaways. Number one, the North County chiefs and mayors get together like they used to and come together and work collaboratively on what needs to be done in North County. Number two, the DARE program, don't have it individually, but have it collectively, and have each police department have a chapter. Those are two things that are very important as mayors that we are going to work on. And before I close, County Councilwoman Richard Hayes, do you have anything to share?
Thank you very much, Mayor. I'm very pleased that we have come together on an initiative such as this. We have to move from a talking perspective to a plan. We need a plan in how we address the temp tags, how we address the cars that are being stolen, how we address the children who are perpetuating these kinds of crimes. So I'm very hopeful that we will move to a plan where we can address all of this, and we can make, and again, the perception of North County is what we take with us each and every day. So if we think that North County is on trajectory going down, that's exactly what's going to happen. So we have to be our own PR. We have to talk about North County and the good things that happen and how we want to make sure that we improve. So thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you, County Councilwoman.
Yes, ma'am. I want to thank you for the presence today, Wesley Bell, and yourself. I run a protocol, Boys and Mentors. I like all the chiefs one day to come to our campus so the boys can see just the purpose of police, because they are helping us on weekends. Once a month, once a day, the fire department, the boys come down. and the police department, children's court, and the office council. But I can't open your doors when I'm working about 50 courts we're working with. We do a model of the cop and everything, as you know. I think it's all the chiefs of the municipalities, when they go to their areas, they know what they're dealing with. Also, we start in Prime University. All the information you gave me today, I will take back to give to the parents. But I ain't on the documents. Because they knowledge is power. Me just saying on a document, we can do it. If you give me a document, I can pass out to all the parents, let them know the do's and the don'ts, we start from there. Because people are not educated about the laws, what they shouldn't and should not do. If parents get educated on their accountability, maybe we can work out that level and start off with the deal we were saying. If you're not aware of what you can do and not can do, it's going to be a problem. And they're afraid to come to you guys because they don't know what's going to happen to their kids being taken and you drop them back off. So boys and mentors, our program, please visit 206 Emily Boulevard. All right, I'll see somebody one day come to your boys. Come to the gym, just break for you. I appreciate y'all's time.
Mayor Sharon Pace.
We have these lovely farms that we would like to present from CTF Medical related to you and for Mr. Wesley.
Oh, the poor chief.
We have Mayor Michelle Deshay. She is the Missouri president of the Missouri Municipal League. I know some of you all have got the MML on my mind. It's in my heart. I never missed a meeting simply because that's where we go to learn how to be better leaders for our constituents. So at this time, I'm asking all the mayors, please make certain that Mayor Deshay gets your information so we can have another meeting. This is the first one. We need to have another one so we can come together and work collectively like we say we were going to do. Okay? At this time, we are finished. I thank you. I thank the Ferguson staff, our city clerk, Octavia Pittman. She is the glue. Can't do nothing without her. Thank you.